This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Pandemic-caused delays in the census will also push back the dates for legislative redistricting.
This actually puts at risk the candidates who want to run for office in the 2022 election cycle.
State Senator Jason Berrickman also talks about the state budget deficit. Central Illinois musician Cindy Youngren didn't start out to make a flamenco album. Then an improv session grew into tambora. Unit 5 School District Superintendent Kristen Weichel reacts to the new education reform bill passed by lawmakers without much input from, well, educators. And find out how you move a two-week yoga-thon to a COVID-safe setting.
All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories.
A former Logan County clerk has been sworn in as state senator for the 44th District. A committee of five Republican county chairs picked Sally Turner unanimously. She served six terms as county clerk before moving into government consulting. She replaces Bill Brady, who resigned last month. The attorney for the defendant in a Bloomington triple murder says prosecutors will not get close to proving who did the shootings on Riley Drive in 2018. Defense lawyer Michael Clancy says it was a place many people went to buy drugs. First Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon told the judge two witnesses will testify they were in the room with Sidney Mays, and two of those killed. 22-year-old Nate Pena, 22-year-old Corey Jackson, and 33-year-old Juan Carlos Perez died. Prosecutors characterized Perez as a good Samaritan who came to the scene after the initial killings and then was shot himself. Mays is charged with nine counts of murder. Central Illinois is moving out of additional mitigations as the region's COVID-19 statistics continue to improve. Region 2, which includes McLean County, moved into Phase 4. McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says it's an encouraging sign.
It shows what we can accomplish and what we have accomplished. You know, we still need to keep monitoring those metrics very closely.
Phase 4 increases capacity limits for indoor bar and restaurant service as well as museums. It also opens the door to more high school sports. McLean County's COVID-19 caseload and testing positivity rate continue to improve. The county health department reports 133 new confirmed and probable cases. The testing positivity rate dropped to 5.4%, the lowest level since November 1st. The county has surpassed 100 COVID-19 deaths tied to long-term care facilities. That's according to data from the Illinois Department of Public Health. The state reported 13 new deaths at those facilities in the last week, including six at Westminster Village in Bloomington. Heritage Health of Normal has the highest death toll at 23. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story is an educational video series featuring local BNA patients like Bruce Beck.
The sound has such an ability to enhance our lives. Being able to hear is something that most people take so for granted.
Bruce's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Unit 5 schools are still studying the impact of a sweeping new education reform bill passed by the General Assembly. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel says various updates on the measure have included conflicting information about implementation dates and to which class increased graduation requirements for lab sciences, computer sciences, and foreign languages apply.
So we very much are unpacking it, but we have a lot of those things in place or already in the works. Unfortunately, you know, there are some pieces of that bill that could cause schools to, you know, have to spend more money to meet that requirement. So we're kind of in the process of evaluating what does that mean for us in Unit 5 so we can plan adequately.
What's the easy part of the lift? What do you have already in progress?
So I would say the education piece about education and Black history. We have a multicultural class that will be starting next school year for our juniors and seniors, and we've had lots of conversations about how do we embed more Black history into either current courses or do we need to add future courses. So those conversations and early work have already started. We don't have a finished product yet outside of the multicultural course at this point.
At least one member of the State Board of Education is criticizing the new language requirements as not educationally sound because they happen too late in the optimum learning curve for kids. They happen in high school or junior high instead of at the grade school level when it's easier to learn a foreign language. What are your thoughts?
What I had heard was that a lot of that primarily came from wanting to make sure students could get into state universities like the University of Illinois. What does that mean for us? Do we currently have enough staff? Would we have to offer different courses to make it work with our current staff? Would we need to hire additional staff? Those are things that I don't have answers to yet, but that we are definitely looking at.
How about the increased lab science requirements? Is that going to be suitable for every student? Not every student is destined to go to college. Some are slated for professional technical educations post high school graduation.
I think with that, we'll have to see what ISBE comes out with as far as guidance on that. And I say that because sometimes, you know, like with foreign language, ISBE will take that and say, okay, yes, students can meet that requirement with foreign language or XYZ. And so I almost wonder if they'll do something like that with the lab science as well. There are a lot of agricultural classes, you know, that have lab-based work that could fall potentially under a science category.
Which pieces of this bill do you know for sure will cost you extra money?
It's likely that the foreign language is probably the first one that stands out that could cost us more money because we offer a variety of foreign languages in Unit 5. And if we have students who, you know, do indeed need to take 2 years of it, that's going to increase the number of students sitting in class. So it just seems logical that that's likely to, you know, increase our cost. Foreign language is one of those where currently a student might take 1 year truly of foreign language, but they might take another course that qualifies and meets that state requirement. So it really does go back to, in my mind, like, is the state going to allow us to fall under those same rules? Or are they going to say, no, it actually needs to be a foreign language? And that's where it's going to be difficult because foreign language teachers, colleges and universities just aren't graduating many foreign language majors in education. You know, we would all be vying for similar individuals graduating and we would have a lot more openings than what we would candidates graduating from those programs.
So what's your early look at this bill? Is it livable or is it going to need additional work by lawmakers to make it something achievable by school districts?
There are parts that I think are livable. However, I would not be surprised if lawmakers take another look at it and maybe do a little bit of editing to the bill. And I say that just because the large unit district association that we're a part of, our LUTA director had some conversation with, you know, one of the key people of the bill. I think they're open to talking with school districts to see, like, what are their needs and what would be potential obstacles.
Why weren't those conversations had before passage of the bill in the first place?
You know, as far as school districts, we did not even hear about the bill until like probably less than a week before it was out there and really public knowledge for many of us in education. So that's a really great question.
The term unfunded mandate is a couple of dirty words in many people's mouths. Is that what this bill is for you?
There are definitely components of that. Anytime you add additional requirements to school districts, that can be viewed as an unfunded mandate, definitely.
That's Unit 5 School District Superintendent Kristen Weichel talking about the sweeping new education reform bill passed by the General Assembly. Governor J.B. Pritzker says he will sign the measure. State Senator Jason Barrickman has gained two new titles. In this session of the General Assembly, he'll serve as caucus chair and floor leader for Senate Republicans. But the COVID-19 pandemic has led to the cancellation of the week's Senate sessions. Christine Hatfield speaks with Barrickman about the work of the Senate in the months to come.
We're a co-equal branch. Whatever the issue of the day, our Constitution affords a process for making laws. For almost a year, that process has really broken down. And that's a disservice to the public. I wasn't surprised to find out that next week's legislative session would be canceled. But I think moving forward, we've got to get back to work.
I wanted to ask about your first few days serving as Senate Republican Caucus Chair and Floor Leader. What's that been like for you?
Well, it's been great. More responsibility means, just like before, you've got to do your homework. You're charged with taking a lead on debate from the Republican side of the aisle. And I'll tell you, at 5 a.m. or 4:30 a.m., after having not slept all night, being given a 750-page piece of legislation and being told, okay, you need to go out and speak on this in front of the people of the state, that's a significant responsibility. I take it really seriously, and I'll enjoy doing that as we move forward.
What are you hoping to see in this year's budget planning?
I think this year's budget's going to be wildly difficult. Maybe more difficult than we've ever seen. COVID obviously has had a huge impact on it. I was critical of the governor last year because the governor really hedged his bet. And so while the state's been spending money as if everything was rosy, the reality is something far different from that. So I plan to work with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. I think some really difficult decisions are ahead of us. You know, our charge is to come up with a balanced budget. We need to do it by this summer. I'm going to do my best to be an active and positive participant in that process and hope that we can land in a place that funds the critical services that exist around our state and lives within the means that taxpayers give to the state.
Another major thing that's ahead is redistricting. How do you anticipate that process playing out?
I think that's going to be a very difficult process this year. First of all, the whole redistricting process starts when the federal government delivers census data to the states. We know that because of COVID, that process will be delayed. All the things that the state has to do once it actually gets the census data is also delayed. This actually puts at risk the candidates who want to run for office in the 2022 election cycle. It could shift all of that stuff back. So we'll work through that. This is a once-a-decade process. It is wildly important that the state get it right. I think it's going to be a very interesting, chaotic, and probably at some points stressful effort. But the end result is one that's necessary, and I'll be glad to play a part in it.
What are your hopes for the overall Republican caucus in this new session?
I look at the political realities here. Illinois Republicans need to win elections if they're going to be able to influence public policy in a way that is significant. So we've got to be positioned to win elections in 22. A lot of our fate rests in our hands. How we come together and unite our party, I think, is critical right now. I travel the state often. When I talk to voters, they want to see our state move in a positive direction. They want to see us grow our economy. They want to see public corruption being addressed forcefully and directly. And they want to begin to have faith that their government, their state, is a place where they can live and work and raise a family. Those are really positive messages that Republicans can embrace.
That's Senate Republican Floor Leader Jason Barrickman, who spoke with reporter Christine Hatfield. Senate leaders say they hope to return for session February 9th. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media. So many parts of our everyday life have moved to Zoom in the last year, mostly boring stuff like work and meetings. But how do you move a two-week yoga-thon to a COVID-safe online setting? Avani Rai and Divya Bukhe figured it out. They are youth volunteers with the Bloomington Normal chapter of a nonprofit service group called Hindu Swayam Sevak Sangh. The group's yogathon has been running for 10 years. In this interview with Ryan Denham, Bukhya says the group's first virtual yogathon is underway through the end of the month.
Usually when it's in person, there's a lot more interaction with people that who may not have seen each other in a while. And it's really great to get that in-person connection and helping them do the yoga and the postures correctly. However, now that it's through Zoom, we have to figure out breakout rooms and how we can still have the similar activities, but with the comfort of being in our own homes.
Definitely. And I would also like to add that even though we're all virtual, it's still a time when it's even more important than ever to address the additional need of mental and physical well-being that the pandemic has brought upon us. So we wanted to ensure that we continue the yogathon in any way we could, whether that was virtual or through live stream or through the Zoom sessions that we eventually decided upon.
The Health for Humanity Yogathon runs for just over 2 weeks. It ends on January 31st. So what actually happens day to day? How does this work?
Until the 30th, we are having daily Surya Namaskar calls on Zoom from 6 to 6:30 p.m., where everyone joins and does two sets of the Surya Namaskars all together. And we do have a few more events planned out later on. So on the 23rd, we have a 24-hour yogathon, which will be people will be doing Surya Namaskars for straight 24 hours. And it's going to be a globally known event because people from the East Coast will be starting it and people in the West Coast will be ending it as the 24 hours.
And then on the 31st is our big finale. So we'll have guest speakers, an overview of not just Surya Namaskar, but other types of yoga as well, games, and a lot more.
What about for each of you personally? Why do you do yoga? What does it do for you? Avani, can you start?
So I think especially Surya Namaskar, out of any type of yoga, it's really considered the first step. So it's what I started with, which is why I think it's such a great thing for other members of our community to start with as well. And probably the most important thing or the most important benefits that I get from yoga aren't just physical, because it combines physical movement, meditation, and breathing exercises. And it's done in a manner so that all parts of my body are engaged and that my mind and intellect are connected as well. So it's not just something physical, but it's something that motivates you. It's something that improves family dynamics and betters our community as a whole.
Divya, what about you?
For me, yoga has been able to calm my mind during during anxious times with school or with just life in general. So being able to wake up in the morning and connecting my body and my spiritual mind together, I've been a lot more calm. I'm able to make better decisions and improve my physical health.
So if there are listeners who are hearing this interview and they want to join, the tail end of the yogathon, can they just kind of jump in, midway through like that?
Definitely. They can join anytime because the yogathon is open to everyone, which means they're young people, adults, senior citizens, anyone can join because it's just a positive benefit to everyone. There's nothing negative with this.
What else should we know about this?
Yoga, it's an extremely worthwhile activity, and the benefits are way beyond physical. And the benefits are really endless, from connecting the community to helping each of us feel more relaxed and motivated. And now is a time when everyone has COVID on their minds. And although, fingers crossed, it's on its way out, until then, perhaps the best medicine to combat this, both mentally and physically, that we all have access to is yoga. It's bound to raise our immunity and well-being overall. So again, I think Divya and I would just like to invite all of you to join us to better your health and better our community.
That's Savani Roy and Divya Bukhya, youth volunteers with an organization planning this month's Health for Humanity Yogathon. It runs through the end of the month. They spoke with Ryan Denham.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story is an educational video series featuring local BNA patients like Bruce Beck.
And I can hear clear as a bell. In fact, people have commented that you're participating more in meetings. And I'm like, that's because I can hear what's going on.
Bruce's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Central Illinois may not seem fertile ground for birthing a flamenco band, but a side jam during the making of a compilation CD among area musicians grew into one of Peoria's newest outfits. Cindy Youngren of Hoosier Daddy and the bluesy Southside Cindy and the Sliptones said Tambora came out of an improv session between recordings with Stinky Pete guitarist Tom Hopwood. Youngren tells John Norton that Hopwood was playing riffs and chord progressions he'd been hanging on to. Youngren says it was natural to add her lyrics and melodies.
And he seemed to like what I was doing to that, so we kept going and ended up making a whole CD.
These are your lyrics. Did you write them specifically for this music, or had you had them for a while, maybe intending them for a different kind of music?
I always borrow a little bit from the past of things that I've wanted to use, but I did literally sit and listen to these songs and add the theme to them. These lyrics were written to this music. In one case, I had to get a friend of mine to make sure I was translating into Spanish correctly, but I was literally Skyping back and forth. How do you say this? How do you say that? And a friend of mine from Ecuador was actually translating. That one is from the song Mi Hermano, of course.
Yeah, you sung that one in Spanish. How did you decide to do that one in Spanish? And I think the other ones are all English. What did it come down to in what language you wanted to sing in?
As far as the poetic part, of course, it's easier for me to write in English, but I've found that Spanish really doesn't have any issues with the rhyming, and maybe it's because so many of the words end vowel that, you know, they flow and they rhyme and they feel rhythmic all by themselves.
The song is Mi Hermano from the new self-titled album by Peoria's Tambora. What is this song actually about?
I think when I started writing, it was about a couple of musician friends of mine who were brother and sister, and they were talking about listening to their music so loud. But I love, love, love the lyrics to this one, especially in the second verse. I don't know if anybody will notice the touch of West Side Story about the Jets. Because that was the one issue my friend had in Ecuador when I asked him to translate, "When you're a jet all the way." He said, "What's a jet?" Actually, being in bands, I mean, I'm talking many years ago, I won't say how many, talking with guitar players and bass players that I was running with at the time, and we thought what we were doing was all that, and we were committed to what we were doing and laughing about, oh yeah, you would practice 24 hours a day. Well, yeah, when you're a jet all the way, you know. And we used to just say that to each other, so I was kind of dying to use that line. And then when I got to use it in Spanish, I didn't feel like I was stealing it.
I don't want to give Tom short shrift on this because he was the composer of these songs, but you're the one I'm talking to, so this is why I'm going to ask you about the lyrics. Does this music allow you to say something in a different way that a blues song can't?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, I just, you know, it just allows you to feel something differently. I don't think any genre keeps you from saying what you want to say. But I think if you picture yourself in a different setting, if you feel rhythms behind it that lift you up, I think there are times where the strumming and the energy of it really pushes your meanings forward. Tom can really play this guitar. It's also Chris DiPiazza on hand drums, also on the timbale. Oh, so tasty. Tim Brickner on bass, Brett Johnson on bass on No Tango Tiempo.
Well, we know you primarily as a blues singer and songwriter, and with this cool project that you're involved with, are you finding that with Tambora, it's like you're energized in a different way or energized again?
Yeah. Changing genres, it really was a challenge. This is the first of it. We're going to go this direction and keep writing and really ready to be energized, though, by playing it out. Let me put it this way. It's stifling to an artist my age who has really, really welcomed the contributions of the folks listening to us live, giving us feedback. I want to play it out, and I want to see people's faces and see if they dance and see if they have joy from it.
The Orioles' Cindy Youngren speaking with John Norton. Hear music from the new flamenco band Tambora on Highway 309 at WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.